The unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story, the coolest place on your dial because it's the only program originating in Houston that is devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored, award-winning KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown. Well, Roxy is home celebrating her birthday. I think she's 12 this week. I don't know. So Houston Institution, Wally James from Progressive Forum, which you listened to earlier tonight, has very kindly agreed to work the boards. Thank you, Wally. Although I'm not surprised by the range of stories told by storytellers on this show, I'm constantly impressed by the extraordinary talent that enriches our community. You know, we've gone from riveting personal narratives to oral histories, enchanting fables, biblical folk tales, stories that frame the works of Houston filmmakers, and so much more. And so much more describes tonight's storyteller, the artistically ambidextrous Rachel Dixon. Rachel earned an MFA in acting from the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana, and after working as an artist in Chicago, she moved to Houston in 1997. She's a veteran theater actor with numerous acting, directing, and dramaturgy credits on her extensive resume, and she's especially passionate about her new Driven Theater Company, a company which focuses on issue-driven works, of which she is the proud founder and artistic director. An outstanding educator, Rachel combines her academic disciplines with artistic endeavors to create a richer and deeper learning experience for those fortunate enough to be her students. And her students have numbered many, from kindergarten to adults, and currently to her lucky drama students at the University of Houston downtown. Rachel, how are you?
I'm great.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I know you're a little nervous, but I don't know why.
I'm great.
You're so unbelievably talented.
You can breathe
and we'll applaud, really. I've seen you at faculty meetings, and I have heard my dear friend Tom Little talk about you on a number of occasions. David Rainey has been on the show, a friend of mine, and he's spoken of you. And I'm embarrassed to say that it took seeing you in August Wilson's classic Fences, in which you played Road Max, and then you really were spellbinding. And that's not a word that I use often, believe me.
Thank you.
And that got me thinking, hey, you know what? I got to get her on the show. And I'm so glad that we finally got around to doing this. I know there was a little bit of trepidation at first on your part, but
Thank you for having me.
Tell me, what kind of work did you do in Chicago?
Very similar to the work I do here. There I worked as an artist doing on-camera work and lots of stage and teaching in the public school systems.
What did you teach in public
schools? Mostly math, believe it or not. Math is one of my favorite subjects.
You studied engineering, didn't you?
I did. I did my bachelor's in engineering. And
math you said was that fun. If you would have had a good job or something, you would have kept doing that?
I worked for one of the big three automotive companies for a few minutes.
Sounds like most of our marriages. I was married for a few minutes.
And had I had the right job with them, I might have stayed in that industry a little longer, but theater called me, so
we're glad you did. I mean, I'm sure you'd be a great engineer, but
Glad to be here. I love the theater.
Now, you have a degree in social work, and that's really essential to your Driven Works Theater Company. And tell us what that means. I know that that is really integral to having a degree in social work. You really need it to understand some of the features that are necessary in a Driven Works Theater Company. I'm a little familiar with it, but tell us a little bit more what that means.
Part of my time in Chicago was spent working with a theater company that did issue-based work for children and senior citizens. So keeping those muscles alive for both of those groups, those muscles meaning the creative muscle. So that was a lot of fun being a part of that company. So when I moved here, I knew I wanted to continue that kind of work. And I had trouble getting institutions like school systems and organizations that focused on specific issues to allow me to talk about the issue. They said I could do theater, but I couldn't talk about the issue. So I went back and got my master's in social work so that I could talk about the issue intelligently and, with the master's in theater, make the art equally as important as the issue.
And I know this is not going to be profound to you, and it's not profound to me, but it will be profound to a lot of people who don't really understand what true professional actors do. Professional actors are educated people.
Yeah, very.
You know, they don't drop out of junior high going, I think I'll do a commercial and make it big.
No.
You know, they're educated. They read books. They know what's going on.
A lot of discipline.
And I love the fact that you emulate that and that you are in so many roles a role model for that, because we need to realize that theirs is tough business. You are an educated, eloquent person in order to be really good at what you do for a living in that discipline. Absolutely. And I know that your journey to the arts tested you in a lot of ways that you never imagined. And that's really the content of your first story,
yes,
correct?
Very much so.
We look forward to it.
It's a long journey. Sure. He was so chocolatey, and he was a boy. I didn't care if he was one of the nicer kids. I didn't care if everybody else made fun of him because of his skin color. Well, the color of my hair. Well, now that I'm grown, I look back, and I love his brown, or black would be more accurate. I absolutely love it. But at the time, I didn't want to be the queen if he was going to be the queen. It didn't matter that the queen was one of the most coveted roles in the play. I did not want to be his queen. It was one of the longer periods in my fifth grade career. Then I cried. I cried for days. I asked the teacher, why was I not going to be Auntie M? I know I was as good as that Amy girl who got it. I didn't want to be a munchkin. Really? Me? A munchkin? I was so much better than that. It didn't matter that the munchkins are in almost every scene, and they get to dance, and they get to sing. I wanted to act, to say words, not sing those fruity songs and change costumes a lot of times and go on and off stage all throughout the play. I just wanted to say words. So goes middle school. Then, while the drama teacher told me she thought I was brilliant and had stuck up for me in the meeting, she put it plain that the fellow over the musical casting portion made it clear he was not going to use a student of my hue. Quite a high school lesson. Then I did all my homework, engineering problem after engineering problem, because I knew if I finished, I could go to rehearsal without thinking about homework. The only problem was the desire to look at my lines trumped my desire to do more engineering problems. I was in this little bitty old post-apocalyptic Shakespeare play with these three little witches. I was one of those little witches. It was not a really big deal at all, only being done in a house that seated 900. It was not a big deal, so I thought. But I loved it. I wanted to do it all the time. I wanted to read every play I could find. I wanted to be where the theater people were. But I couldn't. Engineering was too demanding for witches, plays, and rehearsals. I decided I wanted to go to school to learn more. I asked some theater students what they were doing after graduation, and they talked about this audition thing for graduate schools where lots of schools came together to audition people. But each school usually only accepted 6 students per year. 6 students? And hundreds apply? Hundreds of students who have spent 4 or 5 undergraduate years doing theater? I had only done a few things, but I knew I loved it. I knew I had to do theater for the rest of my life by this point. Then, watching them roll my mother down the hall to the elevator big enough for hospital beds holding bodies in order to take those bodies down to the morgue helped me decide. I could not spend any more of my life not doing what I loved. I did not want to be like so many people who live their days carrying around should-haves or could-haves. She would have, or could have, been an amazing lawyer. As it was, my mother, a great governor-appointed state employee, revered by many, a workaholic, taught me lots. Watching them roll her away, I was lost. I sat in the middle of the tile floor until the bed was out of sight. I stood, turned to the elevator where family awaited, and I knew I had to live to the fullest. I finished that engineering thing, but I knew doing theater would not be on my should-have or could-have list, that I had to find a way to study theater in order to know more, to be smarter, to be better. I went to a faculty person and asked for help preparing. I thought I could at least try to be one of those 6 out of hundreds that were auditioning for those schools, when the teacher said, "Don't bother, you'll never get in," and went on to explain that it's too competitive and they don't take very many minorities. I sat in dumbfounded silence for a few seconds and then said, "Thank you." I left his office, I stopped in the hallway to think and to absorb what had just happened. My thought, thank you for that motivation. I will be back. I went immediately to another faculty who agreed to help me. Needless to say, I went to the audition, got called back for 8 schools, while their superstar students only got called back for 2 or 3 or some even no schools at all. I knew I was going to be one of those 6. I remember saying, how can I compete? I don't even know enough. I haven't read enough. I haven't done enough. I was reminded both by the faculty sitting before me and the spirit who gently nudged, you are only competing with yourself. There's always more to know. There's always more to read. And as long as you live, there will always be more to do. I started the journey in graduate school, finished with my Master of Fine Arts degree in acting. A few years ago, I looked up many of my colleagues, and I was disappointed at how many were not doing theater anymore. How could they not do theater? I, on the other hand, do shows at every opportunity. I am somewhat of a workaholic, thanks to my mother, willing to work with people of any hue, and never allowing my hue to be a hindrance and willingly working without saying any words. I love it. It's like breath. To create is the greatest gift I have ever been given and the greatest gift I think that anyone can give. We all do it through childbirth and gifts and kind words and prayer and shows like this. Art is life. It's my life. The journey here was something, and I am really excited about the journey to come.
Wonderful. You know, that I always talk about how many of our storytellers tell stories for the same reason they eat or sleep, because they have to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm reading in that narrative. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful narrative.
Thank you.
Really unfolded beautifully. And there's so much in there. What is the one thing you want listeners to know about you from that narrative?
The one thing to know about
there's
me?
There's a lot, I know. What's most memorable? What do you want us to learn?
I want people to be inspired to go beyond their box.
Yeah.
When I'm doing shows and I say my words to myself before every show, I say, help me to touch someone so that they can see beyond their own box. Because it's never too late.
No.
It's never too late to do that thing you love.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're listening to So What's Your Story with actor and educator Rachel Dixon on listener-sponsored KPFD 90.1 FM, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. This is Hank Rubicek. Okay, you wanted to be Auntie M? Is that what you wanted to do?
At the time,
right.
Yes.
Now, let's do some Wizard of Oz. we have to do some Wizard of Oz imitations.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Dorothy! Dorothy! Now, what is that? On a 1 to 10 scale, what would you give me?
That is definitely an 11 and
okay.
a half.
How about, let's do the Wizard. Well, come on in! Why didn't you say so in the first place?
Come on in!
I'm an old Kansas man myself.
I say, Dr. Little, we need to do
what
a
do you
Wizard
think?
Of Oz and get
How do you
on
like that
stage.
One? Let's do the Lion. Put him up.
Yeah.
Right?
Love that.
And how about the Scarecrow? He took my arm and they put it over here, and then he took my leg and threw it over there, and it was all over, right?
I am not going to ask why
and
you
And
know
now
all
let's
the
do the witch.
Suggest.
Let's do the witch. Auntie M, I'll give you Auntie M. Want to play a little fire Scarecrow?
Yeah, you know all the lines.
Yeah, I know,
that's
I
funny.
Know. Well, look, you know, when you're 96 like me and you've seen Wizard of Oz 4,307 times. It's no big deal, Rachel, really, to memorize a little bit, right? Artistry seems to be in your DNA. Mm-hmm. It also runs in your family. Tell us a little bit about your artist husband.
Oh, my artist husband is amazing. He is very talented at anything he puts his mind to. He creates music. We have a studio in our home. He has drawn things and creates. He takes photos. I mean, any art, he just creates. Unlike myself, he has to create, and it pushes him in a different way than it pushes me. But he's very, very talented. He sings and dances and acts.
And you have
directs.
three babies.
I do have
and
three
what
babies.
What do they do?
Right. My oldest daughter has decided she wants to sing, and she's going to high school to study theater. My middle boy is a singer, and he's in a group that sings around town. They sing Michael Jackson and you know, pop music, and he loves it. He's very talented. My little guy, he's only 3. But he's already very dramatic, and perhaps more so than all of us. But they're all very talented.
God bless them. That is so wonderful. Yeah, you know, your next selection is from a very, from a truly curious and engaging piece entitled 4 Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough, from poet, playwright, and novelist Intozaki Shange.
Mm-hmm.
Right, very good. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I was able to pronounce that correctly. The feminist drama tells the stories of the joy, pain, suffering, abuse, strength, and resilience of African-American women. And you're going to be performing a staged reading of this piece on June 16th at the Ensemble Theater.
Yes.
In
yes.
Houston. Wonderful, wonderful place. I have been there. It's a wonderful place. And this magnificent theater is a story in itself, and we're going to try to touch on that in just a moment. But before you do the selections, tell us why it's called a choreopoem.
It incorporates text, music, and dance.
Yeah.
It's so nicely woven and cannot really be done without the movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is a choreographed piece of text with an ensemble of women who play multiple roles, and they represent the rainbow that is the life of African Americans, women, African American women.
We're excited to hear this.
All right. She. Orange butterflies and aqua sequins ensconced between slight bosoms, silk roses darting from behind her ears, the passion flower of southwest Los Angeles. She seemed to be looking for rides when she wasn't, and absolutely eyed every man who wasn't lame white or nodding out. She let her thigh slip from her skirt crossing the street. She slowed to be examined, and she never looked back to smile or acknowledge a sincere, "Hey, mama," or to meet the eyes of someone purposely finding something to do in her direction. She glittered honestly. Delighted she was desired and allowed those especially scheming, tactful suitors to experience her body and spirit herein so easily blended with theirs. And they were so happy and lay on her lime sheets full and wet from her tongue. She kissed them reverently, even ankles, edges of beards. At 4:30 a.m., moving the arms and legs that trapped her, she sighed, affirming the sculptured man, and made herself a bath of dark musk oil, Egyptian crystals, and Florida water to remove the smell, to wash away the glitter, to watch the butterflies melt into suds and the rhinestones fall beneath her buttocks like smooth pebbles in a Missouri creek. Laying in water, she became herself, ordinary, brown braided woman with big lips and full legs, regular. Seriously intended to finish her night's work, she quickly walked to her guest, straddled on her pillows, and began. "You'll have to go on now. I've a lot of work to do. I can't with a man around. Here are your pants. There's coffee on the stove. It's been very nice. But I can't see you again. You got what you came for, didn't you?" And she smiled. And they knew. And left in a hurry. She would gather her tinsel and jewels from the tub. And laughed gaily. Or vengefully. She stored her silk roses by her bed. And when she finished writing the account of her exploit in her diary, embroidered with lilies and moonstones, and cried herself to sleep.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
That is beautiful. That really
wonderful
is beautiful.
Text. And that's a short version of that piece.
And that is a poem. I mean, it is a poem. I was reading there's 20 poems.
Mm-hmm. 20 poems. All very different stories. Many of them, most of them present in a poetic fashion, but with the movement, it becomes a story.
That's amazing. That is amazing. This is Hank Rubicek. You're enjoying guest storyteller Rachel Dixon on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston or KPFT.org if you're listening online. But whatever you're doing, whether it's online, in line, or hell, even if you're in a lineup, we're really glad that you're here. And this is wonderful. Yeah, that was a pretty mesmerizing piece.
Mm-hmm,
that was
mm-hmm.
a pretty
a
engaging piece. Yeah,
beautiful words in all of the pieces.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Storytelling rocks. We know that, and we know that the Houston Storytellers Guild is the best place to learn to tell the stories. This is a great place, and this is also our proud sponsor. Monthly swaps are held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30. Once more, it's going to be held at St. Andrew's House on June 17th, this coming Tuesday, and that's located at 1811 Heights Boulevard. But starting in July, we're going to be moving to the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. Same time, same day, 7 p.m., third Tuesday. Always check out HSG's site on www.hsg.com. www.youthandstorytellers.org for all the updates and all the fun happenings. And by the way, if you get online and you take a look at radio shows on the left, you're going to hear 77 shows that we've done over the years on So What's Your Story. And it's a pretty impressive group of tellers, I have to tell you. I'm very, very proud of them. Very, very proud of them. And you want to be sure to visit So What's Your Story on Facebook and like us on the way out. Our newest member of the So What's Your Story team, Shannon McCurchy, is posting some pretty spectacular insights about storytelling and thorough insights about every impressive storyteller who graces our studio each week. She's a wonderful researcher, and Shannon is a terrific writer as well, and you want to read all about all the great stuff that she says, and again, make sure you like us on the way out. Shannon, how are you? Why don't you give us a few words about who will be joining us next week?
Hi, Hank, and hello to all of our listeners. Dr. Walter Blancard, Houston entrepreneur and storyteller extraordinaire, will be telling a story about his own journey to success, but also changing it up a bit by exploring the use of storytelling in business.
Yeah, Walter Blanchard is a pretty amazing man, and he will be talking a little bit about how storytelling is used to reach some pretty successful outcomes. And storytelling has been used in business forever. It really has been. But it's only been formalized now, entering the 21st century. It's a very powerful skill set for everyone, from brokers to bankers to doctors and more. Rachel, let's talk about the Ensemble Theater a little bit.
Sure.
I know a little bit about it. I know it's just a pretty remarkable place, but tell us a little bit about its history.
Sure. It was founded about 37 years ago. I believe we're in our 38th season, and I claim it as one of my homes. I mean, I'll work anywhere as an actor, but I do have an opportunity to work on that stage a lot, so I claim it as home. So I would say we have been around 37 years, founded by George Hawkins, who first had a small space about the size of this studio on 2 a.m. And since then, it is the largest theater in the Southwest, largest regional theater, and it owns its own space. So that's what makes it very unique.
They produce in-house. That's really pretty rare.
And they do six shows a year, which is pretty rare for many theaters to be able to manage to do six well done shows a year in your own space.
Are you going to be in any more of those shows this year?
I claimed it. Yes.
Yeah.
Although auditions for the next season do happen at the end of the month, so hopefully folks will come out.
What does the season look like?
What I learned in Paris. Now, because you've asked me, I can't think of a single title. Two old black guys sitting on a porch talking. Women in the pit. And I'm not sure what the Christmas show is or the musical is for the next year.
Yeah, wonderful.
So, yeah.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about your stage reading on June 16th. Tell us where to get tickets. Tell us where to go. Tell us all that
stuff.
Please.
You can go online to EnsembleHouston.com to find out more information about it. There at the top in the corner, it'll say Colored Girls. And there you can read a little bit about it. But it is Monday the 16th. At 6 o'clock p.m. at the Ensemble, which is at 3535 Main. Mm-hmm. Tickets are $10. This is a part of Project One Voice, which means about 30 African-American theaters now across the globe will be participating in starting the reading at the same time.
Yeah.
So there will be many, many theaters doing the exact same show, their own staged reading of the play at the same time across the country. But ours is a dynamic cast of women from all over Houston.
Now, this particular show, this reading has received a lot of publicity. What makes it so magnificent? I know that through your cutting, we know that it's very unique, and we know that it reads rhythmically and poetically, and it reads differently than virtually any other play that we can think of. It really merges different kinds of art forms.
Mm-hmm. It does.
But what makes it so unique? Why so much publicity about Colored Girls?
Well, I think because it's a part of Project because it's a part of Project One Voice, and it is an iconic piece in African American literature. It's one of the first pieces that spoke to women's issues. The Ensemble has chosen to connect with organizations in Houston that focus on women's issues, and it speaks to the story. that began long before the 70s when Ntozake Shange wrote the piece.
Right.
It is a work that will stand its way through time, I think.
What about her background, Shange's background? What makes her, it's...
She was the first to introduce choreo poems, and there have been many since then. But some since then.
Yeah.
So that is what made the work, I think, the most unique.
Yeah.
And she's had a challenging journey, my understanding, just her life. And a lot of this piece, if you research it, you find that it was born out of her stability at the time that it was written, hence the suicide reference, and the challenges, some of the challenges she faced or she knew about in her life are present in the piece.
Rachel, this is, and I don't mean to put you on the spot with this, but I asked David this question, I asked David this question. He was on about a year and a half ago, and he did he told some wonderful personal narratives that he claimed were unforgettable moments, and they were unbelievable. And when he was done, he looked at me, he said, "You know, Hank, this isn't theater. Man, this is not theater. This is a lot harder." And I asked him what he meant by that, and he said, "Storytelling is not theater." How does it differ? How does it differ? You're telling stories tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, this was a dramatic piece, but still, the first piece was a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
How would you characterize the difference between storytelling and acting?
I think storytelling is a different kind of personal than acting is. I have used to do storytelling like at the bookstore and bring the kids in, and you have to invest in a different, very personal way with storytelling. I mean, you still do that with acting, but it's different.
Right.
With acting, you have the text and you get to create a whole universe around a single character or multiple characters if you're playing with one.
Right.
But in a story, you're responsible for the weight of the whole thing from beginning to end.
It
just becomes something different.
Yeah. I struggle with that difference because whenever I teach storytelling, you know, it's my favorite course to teach. Students say, "Well, this is theater," and I tell them, no, it's not. You're everything. You know, there's no costume, there's no makeup, there is no lighting, there's no special effects. That's the obvious part. But you're also the whole persona.
Mm-hmm.
You have to internalize it. Mm-hmm. You have to own the story. And I think more importantly, if it's a personal story, you really have to give yourself permission to tell the story.
You do, and to find that vulnerable place, which you do when you're acting. But again, it's a little different because it's not yours.
Isn't.
You're invested in a different way. It's almost like a square is a box, a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square.
This was great. This wasn't
this
bad tonight.
No, it was fun. Thank you so much.
I'm going to get you to come back. And you will, too.
I will.
Rachel, thank you so much for your artistic scope and passion for human expression and for the work that you do with our community and certainly our students. Thank you, Wally James, for seriously coming to my aid tonight. I needed you, and thank you, Shannon, for helping with all that you do in terms of Facebook and trying to get guests and just kind of just being there as a great team member. This is a Houston Original Story Show. And it becomes better all the time thanks to people like Wally and Shannon and Rachel and just the entire cast of characters that I just couldn't do without. Stay where you are because Scooter is next with The Inner Side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing you one, and be good to each other, because I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after.